We all know that we came from the stars. Millions of years ago, our ancestors, the Farindal, travelling through the vastness, happened upon a planet unrivalled in its beauty and diversity. They called it the Green Blue and decided to make it their home. They took their knives, cut through the membrane of the Great Vault, and descended to the planet below, leaving behind them their beacons to guide them back to the vastness. And that is the very first story about our world. Well, the first one we know about anyway. Obviously the world of the Green Blue began long before the Farindal ever set eyes on it. But the other species that inhabited the planet had never bothered to develop the written word, being far too busy finding things to eat or avoiding being eaten or, as in the case of the Quokkas, distilling the perfect philosophical balance of smugness and zen that comes from being the first truly benevolent dominant species in this or any universe. That being said, I suppose it is perfectly possible that other creatures may have developed a meticulous and complex oral tradition of storytelling that we, in our ignorance of the languages of other species, just have no way of understanding. But I digress. As I said, this is the first story of our world that we know about. It was sometime after the events of this story that our ancestors were first visited by the Evers, eternal beings of unfathomable power, able to create anything from nothing, who came to the Farindal and elevated the inspired, individuals blessed with eternal life, whose job it was to help steer their people on their path. Around about the same time, in terms of eras and epochs, the Farindal came to experience all the usual trappings of a highly intelligent species. Art, commerce, war, and death. And it was just over a few thousand years after that a certain, rather unremarkable individual by historical standards, realised he didn't like the way things were, and decided he would try to change them. This is his story. The story of the man who wanted eternity. Chapter 1. The Man and His Plan. In a village in the countryside, there lived a man called Tannock. He had a sturdy house, a job he enjoyed, and money enough to ensure there was always food on his table and warmth in his home. He had a family who loved him, friends who adored him, and his only enemy to speak of was a man who had once been a boy at the same school as Tannock, and who had, on occasion, when he was that boy at the same school as Tannock, made rather cutting remarks about Tannock's occasional academic failures. Fortuitously, however, the boy grew up to be a man significantly less popular and less successful than Tannock, which is, ultimately, how we all wish it were with our enemies. And in which situation, of course, it is in fact better to have enemies than not. If all that weren't enough, Tannock also had various hobbies and interests and could honestly say he spent the hours of his days as happy and fulfilled as any person in the world. Quite naturally it was then that one day, while considering the joy and good fortune that filled his life, he was suddenly struck with an overwhelming and terrifying sense of existential dread.
Ah!
He exclaimed.
What'll I do? It's all going to end. It's all going to end. What'll I do? My family, my friends, they won't be here forever. What'll I do without them? What will my life be without them?
And then he had an even scarier thought.
And what about me? One day I just won't be at all.
And this was a real problem, because Tannock, with his house and his job, his family and his friends, his hobbies and his interests, and that one enemy he was so much better than, really rather enjoyed being. He sat there a while, his mind stewing in the toxic gravy of these thoughts. But a person's character, whether theirs by nature or by years of conscious self-development, will out. And, being quite a proactive problem-solving sort of a person, Tannock decided,
"Well, I guess I'd better sort this out then."
He began by writing a list of all the problems of existence as he saw them.
Number one, we'll lose friends which A, will be sad for them, and B, will be sad for me. Number two, we'll lose family. See points 1A and 1B. Number three, we'll lose ability to be.
He decided to rephrase the last one.
Will stop being.
He looked at his list, considered the issues he had recorded, and saw a common thread.
Death. That's the crux of the matter. Death. That's what will separate me from my friends and family, and that's what will stop me from being.
Now, the subject matter may have been rather morbid, but Tannock was actually feeling very positive because...
That means there's only one problem I have to sort out. The Evers existed long before death, and it stands to reason that life in general came before death, which means there must have been a time before death existed. So, I'll just do some research, find out what changed, and work out my next step from there.
He was, in a manner, correct. Death had always been a part of the existence of the plants and the animals that inhabited the Greenblue. But there was a time before death came to affect the Farendal. And, in terms of the number of problems he needed to solve, there really was only one. That he chose to focus on the number and not the scale of the problem can be seen as evidence either of his natural and truly outstandingly optimistic outlook on life, or of a troubling inability to recognise the true magnitude of the problem. Either way, he retired to his bed that night with the calmness of a person who has a problem to solve and a plan to solve it. The next day, Tannock got up early and set off to the library. First, he read some old books on medical science. But they were more about postponing death than preventing it altogether. Then he read some books on religion. But they were all rather accepting of death, which was, as far as he was concerned, not the right attitude at all. He then read some books on history, but they only went back so far and were so filled with accounts of people's deaths that Tannock thought, if there was a history book written before death, there probably wouldn't be very much in it. Finally, he turned to the mythology section of the library, stories and accounts of our world from before history began. And that's where he found it.
And so it was that after the creation of the Inspired, there came a darkness upon the Farendal, and for the first time, they did experience death.
I knew it!
The account described how the Inspired had been elevated from among the Farendal by the Evers, how they had each been granted a special gift, tasked with sharing one of the three most admired principles, justice, charity and mercy, among the people, and how, shortly after that, the Farendal had become mortal. He went on to read other tales of the same events, and, though they all varied somewhat in the particulars of the story, they all agreed on three key points. Death came to the Farendal after the elevation of the Inspired. The Evers granted each of the Inspired a great gift, though versions differed somewhat on what the gifts actually were, with most of them not bothering to even include a guess. And death never came to the Inspired. After a few hours of reading and rereading these accounts, of cross-referencing and double-checking, and only one very short intellectual detour when he found what seemed to be a reference to a great battle between quokkas and some kind of ancient pheasant species, which he could only find in one source and which he quickly concluded must have been a mistranslation. Though I can tell you with absolute certainty that it absolutely wasn't and it absolutely happened, he decided to call it a day and return home. That evening, as he sat in his garden, staring up at the great vault and the millions of Farendal beacons still shining down from the vastness beyond, he pondered what he had read.
Death came to the Farendal, and mortality made them the people we are today. But death didn't come to the Inspired. They were special. The Evers ensured they were spared from death. So it can be done. Exceptions can be made. So an exception could be made for me, for my family and my friends. But how to go about it?
I suppose logically,
he mused,
the best people to ask would be people who have been given exemptions themselves. I shall seek out the inspired, ask their advice, and make my case to them. If I can convince them, perhaps they will speak to the Evers on my behalf. The Evers loved the inspired above all the Farindal. Perhaps they will listen to them and grant me and mine the same favour.
And then he stopped musing, because he realised that he was sitting in the garden talking to himself, and that would look rather odd should anyone happen to pass by. So, he got up, went back inside, noted down a few ideas about where to start his search, and went to bed.
Best to get an early night. It'll probably be a busy couple of days,
he said to himself, again displaying either gargantuan levels of optimism or a dangerous inability to grasp reality. Either way, it wasn't long before he began to nod off.
I wonder what they'll be like,
he mumbled as he fell into a deep and contented sleep. He was very much looking forward to meeting Justice. Which just goes to show that they had never met before.
The Man and His Plan was written, directed and edited by Gillian Massey. Tanak was played by John Michael Love, and the narrator was played by Gillian Massey. The writing mentor and editing assistant was Kenny Boyle. The artwork was created by Hannah Berggren, and the music and sound effects were obtained from zapsplat.com. This recording was supported by the National Lottery through Creative Scotland.